Ghostly Talk! Broadcasting from the world-famous Haunted Winery here in Warren, Michigan, this is Ghostly Talk on August 24th, 2008. Ghostly Talk is independently produced every Sunday night from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to converse about all things paranormal. For more info, go to www.ghostlytalk.com. Tonight, we practice conscious living and dying with Anna Maria Hemingway. I knew I'd screw something up. Later, we get some real life coaching from Jana Hollingsworth. And finally tonight, we talk to Dr. William Bradshaw Shaw about his new book, Sinister Among Us. I even start this one off. I guess I won't. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L. And somebody isn't paying attention
over
here.
I'm Amber. I'm loading up the chat room.
Oh, you're loading the chat room. Amber Rose is loading. She's going into the chat room as we speak. You're probably wondering why Doug isn't here. He should be here momentarily, as a matter of fact. We actually had a crimp in our plans for today as a result of what happened last night, which I'm sure Doug will want to elaborate on a little bit when he gets here, too. So I don't know how much I should leak right now. How much should I say, Amber?
I don't know. I'll sum it up as it was a redneck weekend.
Well, for us it was.
Yeah, but... Well, I guess more for us than probably Doug.
Well, yeah, because we spent... You know, this is our three-year anniversary this weekend. We've been together for three... wonderful year, so yay for us, me and Amber. You think for a couple, they go out and, maybe have a really expensive dinner or do some romantic stuff. And I don't know how the whole thing.
We went and got barbecue.
We went and got barbecue. That's what started. That was Friday night. We went and got barbecue, and that's what started our anniversary weekend off. And then my sinuses have been bothering me all week. My allergies are flaring up, as you can probably hear right now. And we decided to come home, or I said, we're going home, because I'm the man of this relationship, and we do what I say, right?
Naturally.
So, kidding around for the ladies out there. So, basically, we got back, and I was feeling really rough. We were actually at a picnic with Doug, for our friend Steve, our mutual friend Steve, who's going to California. Good luck to you, Steve. And I just was feeling lousy, so we got back here to the house, the winery, and... I said, I want ice cream. So we ended up going out and getting ice cream and coming back, and that was...
And beer. Ice cream and beer.
You got beer. I didn't drink any beer.
I just wanted one.
You wanted a beer, so you bought a six-pack. Yeah. What kind of beer was that again?
Shock Top.
Shock Top. What is that stuff?
Belgian White.
Belgian White. Okay. Well, anyway, so we did that. Then last night... And I don't know how much I should elaborate on this. Should we just let...
I don't know. Doug's so good at describing this kind of stuff. He's going to have...
Well, I don't know if we should wait for him to get here or not.
I think we should wait.
You want to wait? Well, I don't know what time he's going to get here, though. It's the thing. Charming for blowing my nose on the air. I don't know what time he's going to get here. Hopefully he'll be getting here pretty quick. But well, actually, they're on the freeway. Where they're like on the.
Said they were on 696.
Yeah, which is like right here. So. Okay, well, we'll wait for Doug to get here, and if we have to, like, layer the show with little tidbits of this stuff, we will. First thing I do want to throw out there is, I guess tonight we'll do this again. We're going to give away tickets for the Mid-South Paranormal Convention again. Don't know when yet, but it's going to be the same rules as we did last weekend. You know, it'll be first caller. When I make the announcement saying, okay, call as of now, first caller that calls into the line and lets one of our friendly... friendly people or friendly phone people let them know what's going on. We will give you a set of tickets for the Mid-South Paranormal Convention, or one if that's all you need. So keep tuned for that. Now, we talked about this last weekend also. Doug and I got into pretty heated about this, both of us, about this whole the latest Bigfoot hoax. And there's been some, you know, other news that's come out on this. And a good source, if you want to go for this right now, I found is you know who this guy is, Amber, Mr. Tim Holmes, the Bigfoot. He's the guy who was made famous with the Ghost Hunters Incorporated people, buddies of ours, who did a video with him. Yep. Which this guy was completely off the hook, man. He was just crazy. But he's really interested in Bigfoot, you know, and this is what he does. He's the Bigfoot hunter. As a matter of fact, I think he's going to be... Yeah, I just totally remember this. He's going to be on Encounters
tonight. It's 9 at 9.
Yeah. Tim Yancey and Jason Gowan and Trish Yancey. He's going to be on there tonight, so check him out. He's a wild dude, but he's a wealth of knowledge on this stuff. He really knows a lot of stuff. He's cool. But he's, you know, on his Satan's website blog, his MySpace blog, he's got all kinds of art, you know, stories back and forth, especially as of late on this, the whole Tom Biscardi hoax thing, right? And I've heard a million stories on this from what's been going on. And this seems like one of the best sources. The one thing, I think I read this to you the other day, Amber, when we were just sitting around, and I'll just kind of graze through this article. But this is the more fleshed out from last weekend, because Doug actually had a lot of details on this. And this may be rehashing some of these other things, but these are new things that have come up, too. Which, there are a couple of different agencies that are going to be pressing charges against Tom Biscardi.
Oh, apparently. Yeah, that's what you were reading me.
Yeah, which is pretty heavy. Just grozing over this one article that... that Tim Holmes has on his blog, which he didn't cite anybody here. I wish he would have cited this, but maybe he wrote it. So I'm going to cite Tim Holmes for this. Over the weekend, Biscardi called upon his longtime associate Steve Culls, the Sasquatch detective, a former shopping mall security guard, to uncover the truth about the body. Surprisingly, most media organizations fell for the second act of the scam, because this is part two, right? Mm-hmm. This was after they, you know, the Friday thing. This was like last weekend, right? Only a handful of large media organizations followed the caper closely enough to fully understand what was really going on. Biscardi didn't start this hoax, but instead latched onto it once it was presented to him by his dubious associate Steve Culls. Lots of people make ludicrous claims, like Witten and Dyer did. Those are the two guys from Georgia. And like Biscardi has done in the past, more than once, the element that made this hoax attractive for Biscardi was Witten was a sheriff deputy until he was fired on Tuesday, this past Tuesday. Biscardi knew the law enforcement aspect would help the story appear more believable to the media for a little while at least, and that was all Biscardi needed, more or less. After Biscardi was publicly busted and humiliated in 2005 for a different version of a Bigfoot body hoax, he claimed he was hoodwinked by some bad people who had deceived him. All the while, he was raking in money from a phony pay-per-view surveillance project. Oh, my God. Roll forward to 2008. Biscardi now claims he was hoodwinked again. This time by some ludicrous liars from Georgia. He claims he is planning to take legal action against them in an attempt to distract legal action against himself by prosecutors for fraud. Very interesting stuff. You want me? Should I go on? You think I should read some more, Amber? This is pretty good stuff. This is
go ahead.
At the height of the internet storm of curiosity last week, Biscardi was charging $2 on searchingforbigfoot.com to see the photos of the fake body. Millions of people around the world wanted to see the photos, and Biscardi may have raked in a tidy sum. Boy, imagine that, huh? The police department in Palo Alto, California, is now looking into the matter. Palo Alto police have thankfully recognized a few very important things. One... Their department, among others, in Santa Clara County, have jurisdiction to investigate the matter as a wire fraud crime because the press conference was held in Palo Alto. Number two, Biscardi has done this same scam before. Number three, if Biscardi profited at all from this scam, then it is indeed a wire fraud crime that can be prosecuted. Number four, it is quite obvious to everyone that Biscardi was not only complacent... I can't read that. I can't see that far. Complicit in this hoax scam, but was also the mastermind behind it after it was delivered to him by Steve Culls. This last factor is self-evident due to Biscardi's current and past actions and his current and past statements, most of which can be found via the links below, which are on this Tim's blog here. I won't go any further. I think that gets the point across of what happened with this thing. Doug and I were pretty vocal about how we felt about, you know, the situation in Tom Biscardi, and I really think, actually, I'm going to make it a point to listen to Encounters tonight, because I want to hear what Tim has to say about this, too. Regardless of, you know, everybody, you know, Tim's an eccentric character, you know, and we're yet to have him here on Ghostly Talk. Maybe we'll have him drop in sometime down the road, but, you know, I think, I sincerely think that he has experience in this field, and I respect him as a researcher, even though he might be kind of quirky in some ways. And I think that's, you know, that story on his blog right there kind of really sums it up as far as what Biscardi is doing with this thing. I you know, and the thing is, and I think I mentioned this last week a little bit too, it has to be reinforced, whatever you want to call it. And Amber, I'd like you to chime in on this too if you have an opinion. When something like this happens in cryptozoology, it's usually pretty easy to blow the top off of it, like a situation like this. It seems very apparent from what I've seen and read that they've blown the top off this thing. The people involved have been revealed as scams or liars or cheats or whatever you want to call them, but it's very obvious. And regardless of everything, above everything else, they were lying.
Yeah.
It was a trick. They were trying to fool the public. Now, I think this may be going... I know this goes on in the within the ghost hunting community, too. I know it does.
It goes on all over the place in the paranormal stuff, but I think the crypto people take the worst of it.
Why is that?
I don't know. Look at how many... It was on CNN. This was on CNN. This was on, like, huge news sites, Yahoo, all that stuff. And then there's people every day that come forward and say, oh, I have a ghost photo. It's the real thing.
Well, yeah.
And that doesn't make any news. And there's something about a Bigfoot... That I think
Bigfoot seems more believable
than a ghost because it's, I don't know, maybe it's living, not dead.
Bigfoot is much more popular, I think, than most ghost stories are. Bigfoot, when you mention Bigfoot, I mean, there's a monster truck named after it, for God's sake. I mean, that.
But I think whenever you hear a story like that, I mean, when I first heard that, I thought hoax. But, like that story mentioned, having the police officer involved, when no one knew if this was a hoax yet, and I was listening to Encounters Radio, Tim and all them were saying, well, there's a cop involved. It has to be real. Something has to be to this because it's a cop.
Well,
so
yeah.
It did work for a bit.
Well, in a lot of stories, I mean, I've read, whether it be from, you know, cryptozoology to UFOs to even ghost stories and stuff like that, there always is that element. You'll hear that happen a lot with people where they say, well, the person involved who experienced this thing was a Air Force commander or something like that. So they have to have, you know, they're a trusted member of our American government or our military. They're trained to be, you know, for all their senses to be, you know, razor sharp at all times. So if they saw something like this, then wow, you know, this had to be the real deal. But you're right, Amber. That really, I think, added which in Tim's blog that really kind of illustrated that too. Where, well, he was a police officer. He was a sheriff. So, you know, why? It has to be real. It has to be real. So, well, you know, he's not a sheriff anymore from what I'm reading here in Tim's blog. The whole thing's been blown. But my point, again, though, is this with ghost hunting and stuff like that. I'm being blunt here. I'm probably going to upset a few people. And this kind of got grazed upon last week, and I'm going to really be direct with it this week. Basically, I think there are a lot of the same things going on within ghost hunting. I think a lot of people out there, because all of a sudden, I'm noticing, like, more and more on the internet, I see more and more haunted bed and breakfasts, more and more haunted walking tours, more and more of this, more and more of that, right?
It's because of October, and September and October, Television. Well, am I late?
Yeah, you're late.
I'm late? Oh.
Well, let me just get this one out. I have to mention this. I notice
right.
These things that are happening now.
It's a big PR kind of
thing. Hey, you know what? Time. But the thing is, though, hey, we're in America, and you're encouraged to make money any way you want to, so I can't knock you down for that. But
the only other way is to pay some magazine bunny kind of person with, you know, big credentials and on the side of your window or whatever and advertise that way.
Well, we have those in the paranormal too. So, I mean, yeah. we've seen that also. That's being sold in the paranormal.
Yes,
my point
is.
With that, though, is when somebody takes a haunting, my house is haunted. I have a haunted house. And you walk in the house now, and how many times have we been through this, Doug? Where,
yeah.
Hey, this is a haunted house we're going to. You might experience paranormal phenomena. Things might leave your senses open, right? Well, by the time you get there, you're so freaked out that everything's going to be paranormal, right? Well, now you have a haunting. No matter who goes in there, it's going to be haunted, right? So it's very simple, in my opinion, to manufacture a haunt. But it's very, very difficult to verify that person is lying when it comes to ghosts as opposed to cryptozoology.
Right. Cryptozoology, you just show
it's
me the carcass.
It's a tangible thing. It's a tangible
show
thing.
Show me the carcass.
Yeah. So,
and they couldn't show the carcass because they had a...
But in ghost hunting, if we say, show us the ghost, right? And you go, well, there's no ghost. Well, maybe they're having a bad night. Sometimes these things don't happen that way, right?
Yeah, it is harder to...
And I know the rules as good as anybody does, and I adhere by the rules. I know that when you go to a place, not every night is it going to be screaming with activity. But, you know, it's the same thing. You can't verify it, though. And
right.
You could use that excuse over and over again. You
well,
know.
That's like even the 100 bed and breakfast that we went to, the Whispers Estate, which I'm wearing, or I was wearing their t-shirt yesterday.
Yeah, you were wearing
it. It's hard to verify. The thing is it didn't happen for everybody. Like, it happened for me and Sean and the current owner that one night that we were down there. Rachel was screaming her head off, and then it happened again a few times that are up on YouTube.
Yeah.
It happened... with the footsteps when we all were down there. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was weird. But does it happen now? Evidently, the activity has died down quite a bit since change in ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody can verify anything's in the walls yet. And so, until somebody says, hey, you know, I just took a big x-ray of the house, I'm going to think I can't prove what happened down there.
Oh, no, it's insane.
I agree.
I
do know that it was verified that the noises were, what was it, sonically identical. At least some of the noises found on
YouTube.
That's what
Norman sent us.
What we taped, yeah. And so sonically identical noises, is it because a ghost can't, you know, needs to learn how to do it?
Uh-huh.
I don't know yet, but I'm going to keep my mind open on all of it, even as far open as maybe there's wires in the walls. I don't know. And I'm just going to stay that way. I'm sorry I was late. Uh-oh, we're telling secrets. I love that.
What are you talking about? Just say it in the microphone.
You
Who
gave
cares?
Mateo the headphones, but right now he's just listening to us speak, and the battery will die by the time
the battery the won't
come
die.
Yes,
how do you know that?
Because last time I had him on, it died.
The wireless set?
Yeah, it doesn't last for 3 hours.
Well, we got other ones up there we can use, too.
Yeah,
if it blows up, it blows up. Yeah.
Okay, Mateo, you're
fine. The thing is totally charged up. It's like in the green. I think it'll last for a while.
We'll see what happens.
So anyways, though, the reason you're... Yeah, sorry. Why am I saying sorry?
So there are haunted bed and breakfasts that are unprovable or whatever.
Yeah,
everything's
yeah.
unprovable in our realm of the paranormal.
I'm not trying to hammer people, anybody, or anything like that.
But you can have experiences.
It's something to think about,
and
though.
You do have to go to these places. I mean, you know, some of my friends went to Lizzie Borden's bed and breakfast for I don't remember, was it their engagement or their something anyway. And I was like, wow, this is totally awesome because they can... you know, they can, they go to a haunted place, they celebrate their special weekend, and...
Oops.
You guys missed that,
yeah.
I hope.
You okay there, Mateo?
Yes, yes I am.
Oh my gosh, he just blew
what
Mateo.
What did you do to him?
They were, I think the
they
volume was cranked
way
on him.
Too high.
You okay there, dude?
Yeah.
We have a guest in the studio tonight, and we're trying to be all discreet about this thing
it's
while we're doing
not
the show.
Working
and
very well.
It ain't gonna happen. Between Amber and him, I don't know what's gonna happen here.
But let's talk about all that later. We have to talk about last night. I know you. I know.
No,
you
well, that's I kind of mentioned it because I was hoping you'd get here in time. We got a few minutes, thank goodness.
Yeah. The
it was the white trash weekend. It's continuing as we speak right now.
It sure, but
we just nearly blew out Mateo's eardrums. And we got what white trash do. They listen to rock and roll, man.
We brought white trash to the haunted Warren Winery, not the Haunted Basement Studios. That was the last place we had. But the Haunted Warren Winery White Trash Weekend continues.
What are we going to do tonight? Like just go to National and sit there and smoke all night or something?
We'll have to do
that. I mean, we've done that before, but we've done that because we had a meeting.
In our white tank top with oil stains.
And I'll get into a fight with Amber. No, I'll get into a fight with
That'll
Amber.
That'll be great.
And start screaming at her in the middle of the restaurant.
Scream
at her. You should go out and get good and drunk first,
though. Need to be barefoot and pregnant.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what's up with that.
You should go out and get good and drunk first. Then go there.
Get all liquored up.
That would cap off the white trash weekend.
Here's what we did. This was an amazing, amazing weekend. I have to talk about the highlight after the other highlight. Okay. So my friend
there are many highlights.
My friend has this minivan that needed a proper departure from.
He's
this,
here, Mr. Mateo, sitting in the studio
from this realm, and so we took it up to. Everybody knows Evil Jonathan.
Yeah, the unsung hero of Ghostly Talk.
Yeah, he used to do the servers. He watched the servers when we were on Coast to Coast AM. Yep. Anyway, we went up to his property and put the van on the property. It had it towed up there, and then we had a nice big pizza party.
Yeah,
and a van smashing.
Literally,
literally.
Now you're probably wondering what van smashing means, and like I just said, it means literal van smashing.
Pretty much, we smashed the van.
For some of the listeners that are like within my 30 to 40 range, right there.
Yeah.
If you remember this, and this is what I mentioned when this whole idea popped up, do you remember going to the carnival when you were a kid, and they used to have this little charity, they'd have this charity booth set up, $5 to smash up a car with a hammer. You give them $5, you get to beat the crap out of a car, an old junk car.
Right.
We pretty much had the same thing, but the best part was it was free.
Yeah.
Cost us a dime, right? So Mateo, the van was literally... tow trucked here, from Canada. I couldn't get that complicated word out of my mouth.
It was towed here,
and
it no longer ran.
We left off at pizza party. The story continues.
It no longer worked, so it needed a proper send off.
Yeah,
and he volunteered it, so we pulled it up to the property, we had it pulled up to the property.
Yeah.
And
Jonathan's got a big piece of property.
Yeah, so they dropped it off there, and we ate pizza and then went to town on this thing.
Yeah.
It was a great stress reliever, although there was a lot of stress today.
This is what I know. The keys were forgot.
This is
why it all ties together, people, like I mentioned before.
We didn't leave the keys with the van.
Yeah.
So when the tow truck, the removal company came
to get it,
they couldn't put it in neutral. Because you have to put the key in, turn it on, and then that'll move it in neutral.
They can drag it, yeah.
I just said
break the parking gear and be done with it.
Well, that's what they ended up doing. But
oh, really?
Yeah. So when we got there, it was gone. But, I mean, they had just pulled out from what I
understand. Oh, wow.
But we had to head up there to drop the key off
because
we completely forgot to leave the key with them. We left all the other stuff because we're like, they're going to need the title. They're going to need all the legal stuff. You know, we left all that, but we forgot about the key, needing the key
so that it could be put into neutral. Honest mistake.
So everything we remembered except for that. So that's why we had an emergency and why I was late for Ghost Attack. But we
see it all ties together, people.
We jumped up and down on the roof until it bent into a V.
Yeah.
We did the whole.
It was really, and this has to be said because it got said a million times last night. I have to admire the people who built this car. I'm not going to mention car company names, but the company that built this car. You know, it was just this physics thing, like where I'm like, okay, here's a dash. And here is the glove box that just kind of like you open it and it hangs down.
It just kind of hangs.
My foot
there.
Should be able to go through that thing
it's
with
flat.
No. Yeah,
you think all this is
kick flat. That thing right out and feel like Samson, right?
Right.
But no, I kicked that thing.
I especially like your performance on the passenger door.
Oh, was that was
versus Amber's performance on the driver door.
Yeah,
that was the
was
best.
The kicking thing.
No, the window.
The breaking of the window.
We have video of this.
It took you four or five tries.
Oh yeah. Oh, so
to break.
Can't get my higher points. Always got to point at the lower.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And the
door wouldn't go out.
Then Amber went over to the driver's side. Exact same window, only on the driver's side. And she went tap, and it goes. Psh.
Well, in defense of myself, can I say that and as a result of a certain idiot that was hanging out with us,
yeah.
I was a little nervous because just watching him hurt himself because
yeah.
he had to impress everybody there.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little nervous. I'm like, wow, this is real glass. It can cut yeah. you and stuff like that. And he cut his hand open pretty good.
Yes, he did.
So I was kind of like using caution at first.
You know? I don't blame you.
Whereas Amber two-fisted that hammer and just put it right through there. I was kind of like closing my eyes. But, yeah.
But it's very well built. I was very impressed with that.
We couldn't break. I mean, there was stuff.
Some of the stuff we couldn't.
There was stuff we just gave up on it. Yeah. We just said, forget it. We can't break this thing. We got a door off of it.
We hooked it up to toe straps and
the radiator
was
cool.
The radiator
was cool.
When the radiator popped out,
yeah.
and it went.
All the pressurized radiator fluid started. That was fun.
That was amazing.
I felt like we accomplished really something. Cool. When we
yeah,
did that.
That was like wow, what a
bumper! We ripped a bumper off of
it. Yes, we did. It took several tries, but we got it off.
The windshield finally caved in after like between myself and Mateo and Jonathan. Mateo
and
delivering
bag.
The final blow to the windshield.
Yeah,
100-pound punching bag. We were lifting it over our heads. Heads and throwing it at the
yeah!
windshield. Yeah, making horrible sounds. We got the sliding door off the
yeah,
side.
Yeah.
That
actually went boink.
Well, yeah.
That was so funny.
Yeah, that thing popped
all
right
the rest
off.
Of them were like, arr, but that one went boink.
Yeah.
We
tried getting the hatch door off, would not come
that
off.
Would not
we
come
we
off.
Lost it. It just flew off.
And then, of course, none of the doors would close once we were done. That was
yeah,
hilarious.
But it was pretty amazing. I mean, all the glass was gone.
So, well, you know, EJ called us contacts, right? Uh-huh. He's like, well, you know, I have this junk car that needs to be towed away. And the one guy says, I'll give you $50 for it. He's like, okay, let me know how you feel when you see it. Anyway, so he comes up and he goes, what did you do to this thing? Well, we had a little party last night.
Yeah.
Ah, well, here's my card. Next time you have a party, let me know. I want to be part of it, and then I'll just take it away.
It was a lot of fun.
I'm like,
yeah.
It was a lot of fun. It was
as long as you're controlled about it, because it could be dangerous.
But
you know?
Afterwards was the highlight. The absolute highlight of the evening, for me anyway. We put a plastic mat down.
Yeah, this was...
It was just a $5 piece of plastic. For
and it was something debated about. It was debated for a couple of minutes, like it was actually going to happen or not. And I would like to...
I didn't want to do it. I thought, oh, that's dumb.
I'd like to note that I didn't do it.
You did not do
no,
it.
No, I just... I.
But we put down...
I'm too much of a clean freak to really, like, let caution go to the wind.
We put
and
down
rub
a piece
myself
of plastic.
Okay.
We filled it with whipped cream and...
Chocolate
syrup.
Sauce.
Yep.
Or syrup.
And then we belly flopped onto it and skidded. Okay, that was the whole thing. Well, it was amazingly fun.
Yeah.
Filthy dirty, but amazingly fun. And of course, the chocolate evidently leaves an oil film on your skin, so you feel all, you know.
Gross. Like,
no,
just say it. Gross.
No, after you shower, you feel all like.
It was moisturizing,
ooh,
probably.
Very moisturizing.
I'm sure it was, yeah.
But it's very
Doug
slippery.
Doug Wynn's dive of the night.
I had consistency.
You made a belly flop
style.
That we heard.
Yeah,
that was my job with this particular project, was just to judge the slides on it.
Yeah, EJ got distance.
Okay.
I got consistency
and style.
And that one style thing. Yeah.
Because it looked painful.
You were like the best with balance. Mateo got balance award because I mean
you were.
I don't know how he didn't fall.
That
but he didn't.
You did. I did notice that you balanced yourself very well.
Yeah.
So that was surreal evening. I have to say And you know, by the time we got home last night, and I know I was just like. That was exhausting.
I was absolutely
destroying a car really takes a lot out of you. There is video on this. There was a lot of video taken on this.
We can put it up. We have a.
We're gonna
talk.
We got a YouTube page.
Yeah, YouTube page.
We got the YouTube page.
We only have like one thing up, but
we got a couple things on
there.
Well, yeah, we'll take some of this footage. Amber said she's gonna chop it up and put some music to it and stuff like that.
Don't forget the blue dots.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the blue dots,
We need the blue dots, just in case.
We need the blue dots.
You don't want anything showing.
So we'll have that stuff up for you, we'll recap it later on. We thought we... That's the reason that Doug was late today, though, was just that. That was the whole thing.
You guys.
I think it's time to go to break.
It is. We're coming up next with Anna Maria Hemingway.
All right, listen up, everybody. I'm Dee Snider from Twisted Sister. Yeah, you know me from Strangeland and the House of Aaron, TV and Stardust on Screen. And you're listening to Ghostly Talk. Know that.
It's coming. The 7th Annual Mid-South Paranormal Convention will be taking over in Louisville, Kentucky, September 26th through 28th. The Louisville Ghost Hunter Society has went all out this year to bring some of the most roof at the Executive Inn in the heart of Louisville. For ticket prices, hotel accommodations, and any other info on the 7th Annual Mid-South Paranormal Convention, visit LouisvilleGHS.com.
Hi there. When I need to quench my desire for the paranormal, only one thing can hit the spot. I tune into Night Watch with Todd Sheets. Accept no substitutes. When you need the real thing, tune in to Night Watch, the only show that shudders and shakes and bumps in the night. And don't forget, Night Watch is also available on iTunes for your portable paranormal pleasure. Night Watch, paranormal radio for everyone. Why settle for less? Demand the best. Night Watch.
Okay, all you drunks.
say, Sean B. I've been thinking about all the things necessary to produce a proper paranormal broadcast.
Do tell, Nathan S., what are these vital qualities?
Empathy, commitment, quiet dignity, and self-respect.
Indeed! What a shame we don't have any of those traits!
Oh yeah, the Ghost Planet Demon Hunter show is rocking its way on the supernatural scene.
It's drive time paranormal broadcasting without the driving or the timing. Just go to www.ghostandhumans.com.
Think you know what goes bump in the night? You ain't heard nothing yet.
Each week we'll be bringing you the best and the worst kept secrets in the paranormal community.
Yeah, us, the Ghost Planet Demon Hunter, Sunday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
www.ghostandhumans.com. The Ghost Planet Demon Hunter show is beyond the normal broadcast.
You're listening to Ghostly Talk with Doug, Scott L., and Bonnie.
Yeah, so we're recovering from destroying a car last night.
Yeah.
It was fun. I got my cough drop now. It's helping.
Oh, you're all set then.
My nose is still messed up. Anna Maria Hemingway is a writer, spiritual counselor, and member of the International Association for Near-Death Studies. She is the author of Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. And wow.
And the website is...
Yeah, go for it.
www.practicingconsciouslivinganddying. And, of course, that will be... .com. Yeah. And that, of course, will be linked up at ghostlytalk.com in the permanent...
permanently linked up. Yes, yes. Section. Anna Maria, welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be with you.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the book. Let's launch off with that. What Practicing Conscious Living and Dying. Now, I've heard Practicing Conscious Living a few times, right? But there's okay. But you also mentioned and dying. I'm very curious. Tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, the book is actually not as serious as the title might make it out to be.
Yeah.
So really, it's to do with the idea of, you know, how do we live life and actually encompass the fact that death is part of that life we're living and come to a place where we can enjoy life and we have a kind of, I don't know, maybe more of a depth in our whole understanding of what it means to live life,
mm-hmm.
encompassing, you know, the idea that perhaps we're on a journey and part of this journey includes this transition that we call death.
Well, there's so many cultures out there that they, you know, for example, I've always heard the argument that the Egyptians are obsessed with death, right? But in reality, they're obsessed with life because they don't look at when someone's physical being ceases to function or they cease to talk or breathe or what we consider live, right, that their life is over. They consider that, like you just said, a transition into a different part, whereas death is part as much a part of our existence as living is a part of our existence. Am I on the right track there?
Yeah, exactly, because there's always opposites to everything, you know, and death and life are inextricably linked. And I think, you know, when you were talking about the Egyptians,
yeah.
I mean, a few thousand years ago, all cultures, or very many cultures, had a very similar opinion. And, you know, they had this way of working that into their living lives and not being afraid of that. And I think, you know, over the centuries, we have lost touch with that to such an extent
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it's no longer part of our consciousness. And so therefore, you know, when death comes into our lives, for example, if we lose somebody, we aren't prepared at all and we have very few resources. And that's really why I wrote the book, was actually to kind of take a look at what is death, you know, perhaps reconnecting with things like you just spoke about, the old Egyptian way of viewing many older ancient cultures, you know, as I said, had very similar views. And
mm-hmm.
so it wasn't a great deal for them. They had far more understanding. And my idea was really to gather a lot of stories together that actually, you know, help reinforce that point of view. And also, it takes us that one step beyond because,
mm-hmm.
you know, during the dying process, there's an awful lot of what we can call psychic phenomena, that takes place. And, you know, we have that in a near-death experience and after-death communication and in deathbed visions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, you know, people don't perhaps realize that, but when they come into contact with that idea, it can really change their perspective on, you know, overcoming that fear of death and perhaps being able to deal with it a bit better, but also how that frees us up to live life, because we don't have that continual anxiety that most people carry, you know, lodged somewhere in their brain that actually creates a lot of barriers to the way we actually live life.
Well, I know it would take away a lot of that stress, I think, if we had a way to, well, Doug.
Well, the thing is, I know what you're talking about, and I understand how, I mean, it makes logical sense, but I still know people who just somehow, for some reason, despite all of the evidence and all of the stories and all of the things that I tell them and all of the things they see on TV, despite all of this, they still think that, you know, at the moment of death, that's it. You're done. There's nothing. And I just don't understand that. The evidence is so contradictory.
Well,
the near-death experience stories alone, Anna Maria, are they build up, and people are fine. I mean, they've had so many people collect them for years and years and years, and then now they're even publicizing celebrity near-death experiences on TV. I saw one of those like 3 months ago on TV, and so much evidence of you know, not having to worry about what happens the moment after you die, because you just continue on in a different form.
Yeah.
So much evidence says that. But for some reason there are people who are just, you know, I guess they're just either scared or closed-minded. They just cannot, it's hard for them to think of it.
Well, go ahead, Anna Maria.
No, I was going to say that's true. I think when we actually use the word death, immediately people, you know, bury their head in the sand. But, you know, my question to people, if they give that kind of a reply, is to ask them whether they've ever had an experience in their life that they can't rationally explain that has had such a profound effect on them that they've remembered it, and at the same time it's kind of infused them with the idea there is something else going on. And, you know, to date, I actually haven't met anyone that said, no, I've never had anything like that happen to me. And this could be, you know, anything. It doesn't actually have to be, you know, something to do with death. But at the same time, I think, you know, death is something that I focused on because there's so much material, like you said, around that, and so much evidence to, you know, suggest that there's a strong possibility of a continuum of consciousness following physical death. But I think any paranormal, you know, psychic experience really comes from the same source. So it doesn't really matter whether you think you've seen a ghost or, you know, you've had some experience in your life that it's inexplicable to you. It comes from that same source. And so I think that if people kind of ask themselves that question, they often come out with an answer that kind of says, well, yes, I have experienced something that I can't explain. And to me, you know, that would just lead into, well, if you already know that there's something that you can't explain, you've had that experience, then, you know, this can kind of open up to the fact that, you know, there may be all sorts of other things happening that you don't know but are possible. Possibilities, strong possibilities.
I think in the event of someone's death, the problem that people have still today is that when someone close to them does pass away, they focus on the sad part of it. You know, let's face it, when someone does leave this material world, this physical world we live in, where we can touch them, where we can hug them, where we can, you know, they're our friend, they're our family member. You can text them. We can call on our cell phone, right? There's all these things, right? That's hard, you know, especially, you know, there's a million emotions involved with this, right? There's love. There's all these things, right? It goes to the old saying, you know, people always focus on the things you do wrong more than the things you do right, right? And the same thing applies here. People are going to focus on, well, he's dead. I can't play poker with him on Friday nights now. What the hell is that, right? Whereas people don't think of Well, this person's moved on.
And people do have, everybody has a selfishness in
them. Yeah, we want that person here with us. We don't want them to go.
Right, you want to be able to talk to them whenever you want, or whenever you can, or, you know, you want to be able to hug them if possible. You know, you want that stuff, and so you've got this little, it's a little tiny bit of selfishness, and maybe it's wrong to have it, but then again, everybody has it, so is it really wrong? No, it's probably just a thing you've got to work through.
But we wind back to this thing, like you were saying, Anna Maria, where if we could just go to T-Mobile and get the after-death package, right? And put that on our phone, right?
For $7.99
All joking aside, for our $8 a month, right? Okay, we can call all of our loved ones who are on the other side. We've mastered. If we haven't mastered it, we haven't mastered it yet. Therefore,
we haven't mastered.
People are only going to believe as far as you can buy. You can sell it on your computer nowadays.
That's true.
Okay, they're only going to believe that far. And I believe I'm with you, Doug. I'm with you, Anna Maria. I believe that there's something really is happening here outside of the physical things that we do in life. But people out there are only going to believe as far as, like I said, what software you can put on your machine, right?
Or what options you can add to your cell phone.
Yeah, exactly, right? So as soon as they get the package from T-Mobile to do that, people, yeah, sure. Okay, well, mom passed away. What a bummer. But hey, you know what? After she does her transition period there, gets past her probationary period, she gets phone privileges there in the wonderful kingdom wherever she's at. So I can call her then. We can hang out and talk, right? Now, that's totally cool. That would be a lot of fun. But unfortunately, that stress would relieve a lot of stress.
We don't have it. So yeah, it is a big unknown. These stories, Anna Maria, it is really... I scanned through real briefly because... I had to know after I read the jacket cover. I'm like, wow, this looks amazing. And really, in your book, I'll read some of the things from the table of contents. Ruben's story, Tiffany's story, Dave's story. A little further on, John's story, Suzanne's story. It really is a list of stories. This is my favorite kind of thing when I go to... conferences and things.
Yeah.
I love to just sit there and let people tell me their stories. And usually they tell me stories of ghost hunting or stories of their group or stories of what they learned at this and that event or stories of when they went to a haunted bed and breakfast. But these are obviously stories related to, near-death experiences and things, you know, and overall practicing conscious living and dying, you know, to bring the book together. But this is exactly the kind of thing that I look for, is a collection of stories. You wrote such a brilliant layout of a book, so I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Well, there is something here in my notes I want to dive into for a second here, and you did. It's kind of been mentioned a couple times here, but deathbed visions. Now, we've heard about these things. I've actually got a couple of stories I could tell from this. But
Scott's story, that's for part...
Yeah, because I'm on my deathbed every other week, with all the sinus problems I have, it seems like. Yeah, I'm on my deathbed all the time. But people tend... This is a phenomena, obviously. It's a pretty self-explanatory phenomena, as far as people who are on their deathbed.
Right. I've talked with people who work in, nursing homes and elder care kind of places, and they say that this is as real as, I used to work on a telephone line where people would call in and seek help, right? Not help like, for money or whatever, but help with their computer. And I know for a fact that the full moon has an effect. I know this because I have been there. I have been on the lines, Well, the people who work in elder care and in the hospices and things like that, they know for a fact that there are deathbed visions and deathbed and people see their, deceased loved ones just before dying. I mean, they tell these stories of them calling out to past relatives, and so this happens.
Well, I
think it does happen. I mean, I think I'd like to say that obviously, we do suffer a lot of grief when we lose someone, and it is because we're not going to have that physical presence in our lives. But I think at the same time, after-death communication isn't as rare as people think. And again, most people, when you ask them if they've noticed something very simple or very subtle that kind of convinces them that there's some kind of communication going on, again, most people say yes. And I gathered stories together because, you know, story is the most powerful medium that we have of communication with each other.
Uh-huh.
And we only have to look back to the ancient myths. You know, the story is so powerful. And these near-death experiences and deathbed visions that you were talking about, or even after-death communication,
yeah,
are very powerful, and they're inspiring for people to hear, because then they actually kind of reflect themselves and think, well, you know, it was very odd that day that so-and-so died, because, and then they will start telling you their own experience, and for most people, they do notice something, you know, it isn't just like they're gone and that's it. There is that overwhelming grief, which as human beings, you know, is natural, but there are hints, subtle hints, you know, that most people do tend to feel either the presence of the person around them, or, as you say, you can be with a dying person, and hospice workers sometimes actually see these visions too, that people do come to collect the person, you know, a deceased relative, a friend, it can even be a pet. But something seems to happen for an awful lot of people in that final, you know, period before this transition, and it's almost as though that person is actually able, that, you know, the receptors are open and they're able to communicate with whatever it is out there,
yeah,
you know, in a far stronger way.
Well, I know that one of the stories that I have is when my grandmother passed away. That was in 1993. My grandfather told us a story that the night that she, that late morning, well, early morning that she did pass away, he walked into the bedroom and she was actually like had her arms up, looking up, you know, to the ceiling, mm-hmm, or up to the sky, or whatever it may be, saying, you know, Wayne, I'm coming for you. I'm coming, Wayne. I'm coming.
Yeah. And
Wayne was my uncle who passed away before she did, a couple years before that. Actually, it was, mm-hmm, a year before. And she, you know, of course, that was just that devastated her. She lost her child the year before. So that was what was said, is, you know, that's what my grandfather, mm-hmm, said that she was saying, is that, Wayne, I'm coming for you. And then she passed away that same morning. So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, I think people, that's one of those things, is the deathbed vision. She's seeing something. Now, I don't, you know, I think it's very probable that, you know, you're going to see something like that. It's
well, scientists say.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You know,
yeah,
because we're biochemical furnaces, biochemical,
yeah, yeah,
electro furnaces.
I'm sure you've heard this too, Anna Maria.
And scientists say that it's just random neurons firing in your brain.
And you're tripping out. You're just tripping out.
And you're essentially tripping.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
That's what scientists say. But I've heard this over.
No, either way, I mean, come on. You're still, it's still heavy one way or the other, I think. I mean,
well, I think that's true, but I think also, uh-huh, you know, when people say things like that, you know, there was a questionnaire given out in research to hospice workers that had been with people in the 48 hours prior to their death.
Okay.
And the hospice workers had seen the apparitions. Mm-hmm. They had actually seen these visions as well. So that kind of discounts the idea that, you know, the person is hallucinating or on medication or in some form of dementia, because an outsider has actually witnessed what has gone on too. And many hospice workers will verify that. So
yeah.
I think, again, you know, there's an awful a way of trying to rationally explain these things in our human, quote, way.
Uh-huh.
But there's an awful lot of evidence, again, that points to the fact that actually we are really unable to do that, that all of this remains a mystery, but every now and then we get kind of these glimpses to show us that, you know, we are part of the mystery, and we can see a part of that, and then our whole kind of outlook changes. And certainly from the stories I got in the book, which is, you know, all of these people were changed in some way, and I think that's the most validating reason to explore all these things, is not so much, you know, to try and prove whether something's happening or not, but actually, does it make a difference to this person to have had this experience? Well, if it does, and they live their lives differently, and they're not afraid of death anymore, and they actually lead their lives in context of the whole rather than a very, you know, self-orientated, perhaps selfish way,
yeah,
then, you know, all to the good. We have examples here of something that can actually, you know, perhaps change our human experience for the better.
Well, you're talking about people who have near-death experiences, correct?
Well, and also, you know, people that have actually had a very transformative effect because they've decided to be fully present with a dying person. And often you hear very unusual words that you wouldn't imagine, like beautiful, calm, transformational. And these are people that might be walking away from having lost a loved one. And they're carrying all the grief, but they've actually been imbued with a sense of something else. So I think, you know, that this period is very important for us to get any understanding of life beyond, you know, the little boxes that we kind of compartmentalize things into. And, you know, it's the same with after-death communication. People can receive messages that have a very transformational effect on them, you know, that something very, very powerful is happening. And certainly in near-death experiences, you know, we see that all the time. People change their lives, the way they act to other people, the whole concept of some spiritual dimension to life. You know, we don't just hear this once or twice. We hear it over and over again. And
I agree.
I think one of the reasons that we keep hearing this now is because the world actually needs to receive these kind of messages, you know. And that certainly is the experience I've had, that it's not just kind of talk. You actually see these people and you look at the way they did live their lives and what they're doing now, what kind of work they do, what they're interested in, how their spiritual life has changed or values, and you see that something has changed them.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the conversations we've had with people here, I mean, it always is. You said, like you just said also, Anna Maria, it happens over and over again. And a lot of the conversations we have with people who have had any of these things that we've mentioned here in this last half hour, a near-death experience, have been in the presence of someone who is passing away, that have had a communication from the afterlife, they all kind of come away from that thing saying, you know, it really changed my outlook on a lot of things. And I think things differently now. I value things a little bit more. I've heard that over and over and over again. So these experiences are very profound, obviously. They're not just something like going to the store and buying milk. That's something we do. It don't really change much, except we get milk. You don't get anything out of that, though. But something like an experience like this, an after-death communication, yeah, they really do change you. And I agree. They did. They're profound. We've had them.
I think the thing is, as well, is that the changes are permanent. And that's, you know, what we're all looking for, because it's easy to, you know, do a course of this or do a course, you know what I mean? And something has an effect on you for maybe a week or a month, and then you forget all about it. But these changes appear to be permanent. And again, you know, if something's permanent, well, something pretty amazing must have happened to kind of shoot someone out of one way of perceiving life and living life into something quite different.
Yeah, it isn't like trying to quit smoking, for example. Uh-huh. There's a good one right there. You know, you can do it for like a month, mm-hmm. things are good, and then a lot of times you start back up again. These are permanent. I totally understand that. I mean, there is a lot more to it. And I think, you know, really what I think, you know, we only got like a couple seconds here. Really what I think it comes down to, though, still in this day and age with people, is that we do live in a materialistic type society. And and I don't want to equate people to possessions, but we have people in our life that are very important, and when they go, it's very difficult to deal with that. But I do think if people truly believe that there is something that comes after this physical life, it would take a lot of stress off this.
Yeah, you know? And these are fantastic stories. What a collection. Practicing Conscious Living and Dying by Anna Maria Hemingway. The website, www.practicingconsciouslivinganddying.com. There's no hyphens.
Yeah, all run together.
It's all run together. And, of course, Anna Maria, we're going to put a link up in our guests, their past guests section about, you know, to this, because what a great work. Thank you so much.
We got to go to break here. Hang on the line, though, Anna Maria. Don't leave us just yet, okay?
Okay.
Hey, guys. All right, coming up after the break here, we're going to be talking to Jana Hollingsworth, who is a life coach. And we need a lot of that here. So that's why we're going to have her come on.
Yes, we do. We need a lot of coaching. And don't forget, on our breaks, these are independent bands and artists. So enjoy the music on our breaks.
For more info, visit ghostlytalk.com.